Patriots Friday on WEEI is brought to you by Shaw's and Star Market and by FindMassMoney.gov.
Jones and Keefe
on WEEI.
Download the Odyssey app and listen on demand anytime.
DJ Lyons in for Jones and Keefe here on WEEI. Happy holidays to you. Good Friday as well. 617-779-7937. So, John, we were briefly talking about it in the last break that tomorrow, the Fenway Bowl, the Wasabi Fenway Bowl. You like wasabi? Do you eat sushi?
I've tried it before, but I don't eat it regularly. I'm not like Rob Bradford in the Baseball Isn't Boring Guys with the wasabi challenge.
I was about to say, John, you're walking into a dangerous fire by saying that stuff.
Oh, my gosh. Sushi, like, I eat it in many different ways. Well, Fenway Bowl, Freddie Kitchens is officially the head coach for Carolina tomorrow, UNC, tomorrow for the game. But you do feel like the meme of Bill Belichick with the binoculars really plays into effect for tomorrow. One, do you believe Belichick's going to be here tomorrow, correct?
I would think so, unless he's got a great transfer portal kid showing up to campus. But yeah, I would think so.
Yeah, but I would almost think it would be it wouldn't be like you would feel like Belichick would have to be there just because this is the prequel to what's going to be his next story. Right, so you'd have to feel like he needs these guys to perform well, or at least be able to have great conversation with these guys to let them know what is out in front of them, so that way they're prepared to go into next season. It can't be like, okay, this is like, we got to let this Mac Brown relationship finish out first, and however ugly that ended, and then start. Because look, for them to be playing here in Fenway on the same day that the Patriots have a game, 30 miles away. Like, you'd figure Bill has to be here.
Yeah, and Freddie Kitchens, I think it was 2 weeks ago the story came out. Belichick said he's going to stay on the staff.
Yeah.
So maybe Bill will be there as a sounding board of sorts or something, or kind of say to Kitchens, like, hey, this is kind of how I want certain things managed, how I want certain things to look. Because, again, if you're going to keep this guy on the staff, you probably want him operating in a similar vein to how you want to operate the team next year. So I think it would make sense for him to be there. And I don't know, have you ever been to the Fenway Bowl before, KJ?
No, I haven't.
So it's a great event. I went a couple years ago. Actually, old friend Dion Branch was the interim coach at Louisville, won the Fenway Bowl a couple years ago when I was there.
You should call it the interim coach bowl.
it was kind of funny because it was Louisville versus Cincinnati, and Louisville's coach had left there to go to Cincinnati.
Well, so then that's Louisville, right. I remember that story.
Yeah, they needed an interim coach. And, of course, Louisville beat Cincinnati that day. So it was a cool event. It was a lot of fun. But yeah, I think as far as Bill goes, like if I was Bill, why not stop by? And you know, every single person there from New England is going to bow down to him and then give him a standing ovation. So I think it would be cool for him to be there. I also think it would be helpful for just kind of him as a new college head coach, right? He's the best pro head coach in NFL history, greatest of all time, but he's never been a college head coach. Maybe he can see up close. This is how a college game works from a coaching perspective. And maybe it's identical to the NFL, but maybe there's two or three or four things that are different than the NFL, so he can experience that before his actual first game as head coach next fall.
Assuming Belichick is there, this is my prediction. Belichick will be in the coach's booth above the field. I think he's in that room, and I think that's really what's going to be fascinating, because you're seeing him. Because Bill knows every facet of the game, right? So it's not like he needs to be on one side. He can tell everybody what they need, what he should be going on with all those guys in that room. And so wouldn't it be fascinating to, because I don't think I've ever seen Belichick in a coach's booth. Have you ever seen that?
Off the top of my head, no.
Never.
Because even when he was DC with the Giants, he was on field. Right?
Yeah. So he's always been an on-field guy. So this may be the I might just watch it just to see what it looks like to see Belichick with his coaches in the booth, allowing Freddie Kitchens to do his thing on the field. Because I think if Belichick is on the field, then it becomes kind of like a camera game distraction where they're constantly cutting to Belichick and what is his interaction with the potential player. Is, you know, like, you don't want to almost kind of sell the story of undermining the interim guy, but if you can do it from the perch and see things from above, oh my gosh. Here's what's crazy. This is like 10 years ago, this is the Atlanta Falcons versus the Patriots game, right? Like, it's in terms of the coaches. So you have two former NFL coaches, one of the greatest of all time and one that had a great run with Michael Vick. It's just, like, of all the bowl games that it probably have a really good subplot, where you don't necessarily have the great product on the field, I think, is really this one with Belichick returning to Boston while the Patriots are playing a game pretty much as one is finishing, the other one is starting.
And we've seen a few North Carolina kids who originally in the portal withdraw from the transfer portal once Belichick got hired. If they go into this Fenway Bowl, and let's say they play really well and win, maybe that convinces other guys to stay. Like, hey, we won a bowl game with our interim coach. Bill was here, kind of watching us from up above. We'll stick around for this guy. Maybe that convinces those one or two portal kids still out there they're really after who are on the fence to come to North Carolina. So I think there's value in a couple ways for Bill from the recruiting end, but also, like I said before, just, I mean, he hasn't been a college head coach before. He can see how the operation runs from that side of it. So when they play, I think it's August 30th is their first game. It's not his first time being around a college team as a coach getting ready for a game. Because he's been on scouting visits. He's seen a bunch of college games, obviously. But it's still a different perspective when you're on the coaching staff getting ready for the game.
Does he walk, if they start to get towards victory formation, does he walk down from the booth like ownership?
Oh, I hope and so. Does he go to Gillette Stadium after, take in the Patriots?
I don't know.
I don't think they would allow him in. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't. Sorry, sir. Your ticket is not.
Sorry, your key card doesn't work.
Right. Key card's not working. But I think the press conference is going to be very fascinating because the press conference is probably, for the post game, for that game, is probably going to be occurring probably shortly after kickoff, maybe somewhere in the first quarter of the Patriots game against the Chargers. And what a just the position you're going to see. And what you mentioned with recruiting, I think this is going to be a great recruiting tool for North Carolina, for Bill, if you have these guys already testify just the excitement and zeal that they're ready to play again next Saturday. That's going to entice some kids to say, man, to go play for Belichick in an ACC where you know you're going to be in part of the college football playoff. We'll talk about the college football playoff a little bit later in the show. But I think it's going to be very fascinating to have on one side of the screen Belichick probably answering just a couple of questions and probably a lot more candidly, right? He can answer the questions candidly about his program. He's in charge. And God forbid that the Chargers are up 14-0 at the same time. That would be a horrible look. KJ and Lyons in for Jones and Keith here on WEEI. 617-779-7937. We'll get to your text later. And we've got Justin Turpin coming next talking Celtics. But right now it's time to trend with Joe Braverman.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Trend Now is brought to you by Timeout Market Boston. The final injury report is out for the Patriots as they get ready for their penultimate game of the season tomorrow afternoon against the Chargers at 1 p.m. Cornerback Marcus Jones is out for the second straight week. He's got a hip injury. Starting center Ben Brown is questionable with a concussion after not practicing all last week. Kyle Duggar, Anthony Jennings, Jabril Peppers, Cole Strange, Jelani Tavai, and Caden Wallace are among those that are questionable as well. For L.A., both of their starting running backs are on the report. Gus Edwards is out with an ankle injury, and J.K. Dobbins is questionable after being designated to return from injured reserve this past week. Also, both tight ends Will Dissly and Hayden Hurst are questionable as well. Staying in the NFL, the Seahawks knocked off the Bears on Thursday Night Football by a final score of 6-3. Yes, Thursday Night Football ended 6-3. This game featured 13 combined punts, and Caleb Williams threw the game-ending interception with 20 seconds to go that kept Seattle's playoff hopes alive at 9-7. Chicago moves to 4-12. Celtics will look to bounce back from back-to-back losses tonight for the first of two straight home games with the Indiana Pacers. Jrue Holiday and Kristaps Porzingis are questionable. Holiday missed last game on Christmas with right shoulder impingement, while Porzingis left the game with left ankle sprain. Tip-off from TD Garden is set for 7:30. The Bruins return to the ice for the first of a home-and-home on a back-to-back with the Blue Jackets. The Bees have won four of their last five, including their last game on Monday, which was won 4-1 over the Capitals. David Pastrnak was seen skating this morning at Morning Skate. Looked to have no issues there after leaving Monday's game with an upper body injury. Puck drop from Columbus is at 7 p.m. And bowl season in college football continues tomorrow with Boston College taking on Nebraska in the Bad Boys Mowers Pinstripe Bowl from Yankee Stadium. That kickoff is at noon, while Fenway Park hosts the Wasabi Fenway Bowl between UConn and North Carolina tomorrow at 11:30. Experience the essence of Boston's culinary and cultural scene at Time Out Market Boston, nestled in the Fenway. From live music sessions to food and beverage tastings and everything in between, Time Out Market Boston showcases the best of the city under one roof. I'm Joe Braverman, and that's what's trending on WBEI and WBEI.com.
You guys are playing inconsistent basketball over the stretch. Have you seen that If so, what's kind of the root of it, and what's the way out of it?
We got to just take a look at it. It feels that way, but it always feels a little bit worse than what it actually is. We had some different guys in the lineup and stuff like that, so I feel like we haven't had as much continuity as we would like when we've been out there. So I guess we take a look at it, and it's a moment where we can improve as a team.
KJ and Lyons in for Jones and Keefe on WEEI. Happy holidays to you. 617-779-7937. We missed any of your text messages. We'll get to them here in about 20 minutes. It's Jaylen Brown discussing, like, what's going on with the team losing the last two, losing three of their last four. So, John, let's go ahead and bring in our buddy Justin Turpin, who will play NBA Crypto with later. But, Justin, look, we haven't had any conversation about the team not being consistent. Look, you're going to have a loss, but usually it was followed by a win. Someone may be injured, but someone else picks up the slack. But we are talking about a team, and if you look at the macro of it, has lost three of their last four. For a team that's lost eight games total, is there a bit of concern, and where would that lie?
Yeah, I don't know if it's necessarily concern, because I really do think we're past the point of when they go through bad stretches really overreacting to it. But I will say there are some signs that just can't be ignored. And sure, they're going to point towards the lack of consistency, and that could mean in play, which they have. Like, look at against Orlando, and the offense faltered, and then defense was the problem against Philadelphia on Christmas Day. So we haven't really seen them put it together. But I think we are past the point with this team where we're kind of overreacting when they have these bad stretches, which are just inevitable across an 82-game slate. Obviously, you factor in they've been missing guys. It's tough to get consistency when guys like Kristaps Porzingis aren't in the lineup, Drew Holiday, Sam Hauser. So it's just been tough to get consistent from that standpoint. But there are certainly some warning signs right now that can't be ignored, but I just don't think we can overreact to them.
Terp, I want to ask you about the Celtics defense here, because one of their calling cards last year, and of course 2 years ago when they went to the finals, was how good they were defensively. Last year, of course, top three, O rating, D rating, net rating. This year, their defensive rating, it's hovered around 10 for most of the year. They're eighth right now. They give up 118 to Philly, 117 to Chicago last week. How come their defense, although it's still good, how come in your eyes it hasn't been as dominant as it was a year ago at this time?
Yeah, you're 100% right, John. And they learned that in 2022 when they went to the NBA Finals. They made it, obviously, because of their defense. Then they learned then that you also need the offense to complement it. And Joe Mazzulla really emphasizes the fact that the game's connected on both ways, that you need good offense to have good defense and vice versa. And for the Celtics, the intensity, the effort, and the focus just really haven't been there this year. We're seeing some defensive lapses that we just haven't really seen from this team, and I think that could be having different guys in another lineup. But I look at that play on the side out of bounds when Tyrese Maxey dropped the ball with 1.1 seconds on the shot clock and still made the layup because there was just nobody there to contest it. So we're just seeing lapses that we're not really used to seeing from this team. So I do think it's, part of it is the inconsistency of guys just haven't been there, and Kristaps Porzingis not being there for the rim protection is a big deal because that's been an issue for them. And he was supposed to shore that up, and the numbers were trending in that way when he got back, but he just hasn't been out on the court enough. So I'd look at the rim protection as an issue, and also teams are just getting up more threes. I mean, we saw Chicago do that, Orlando try to do as well. Teams are trying to match the Celtics in threes, and that's automatically can kind of fluctuate that number.
Look, we're talking with Justin Turpin, hanging out with KJ Lyons here on WEEI, in for Jones and Keefe. We're talking about the rim protection and Kristaps Porzingis. And look, he came back earlier than some of us thought. I would probably say, look, if he came back when you thought that he was supposed to come back, these things could still happen. Do you feel like the rim protection has to be addressed in maybe some type of trade deadline, veteran minimum acquisition, just to be able to get in there where it's like, we don't need you to score, but we need better rim protection, because that's been the weakness of the Celtics before Porzingis got here. And if you're not going to have Porzingis as often, I probably think you're probably going to reduce minutes coming back to monitor what's going on. Who picks up that slack for rim protection? Do you go get somebody?
If you're going to go get anybody, I don't think it's with the bigs. I think they're confident in what they have with their bigs, and they should be. I know we're talking about how the rim protection has been an issue, but yeah, for the most part, guys like Kata, Cornett, Al Horford, obviously you know what Horford can do, they've done their job. I look at it more as a wing. And you've had to rely when guys like Sam Hauser have been out. You've had to get a little bit creative. We've seen a lot more double big. We've also seen him turn to Drew Peterson. And you're taking a chance on a two-way guy who was great when he's played. But are you really going to rely on that come the postseason? So if they're going to go out and get anything at the deadline, and again, they're really restricted of what they can do, I'm looking at that backup wing slot. I think that's one of the biggest things that this team has right now. And, you know, we talked about it all summer. One of the only players they lost was O'Shea Brissett. And he didn't have a big role on this team, but he played it really well when he was on the floor. And I look back to game two against the Pacers last year. He only played like 12 games or 12 minutes in that Eastern Conference Finals game two, but he swayed the game. They went on a big run and ended up winning that game. So they're going to need, I think, somebody off that backup wing slot there, possibly at the deadline. But again, they're just so restricted as to what they can do. I think their only avenue would be to trade Jaden Springer, and they tried to do that before the season, and they were just no biters. And had they moved on from him, I think they probably wanted to retain Lonnie Walker. I think they brought that guy in, and he impressed them in training camp, but they just couldn't make it work with the financials. So it's going to be interesting what they do, but I would look more at that backup wing more than the big depth, just from the trade deadline perspective.
Terp, do you have any concern about the lack of time together the Celtics' true starting five has had? Because we know how good they can be. They won a championship last year. But with that true starting five of Holiday, Porzingis, White, Tatum, Brown, only a handful of games together this year. And I think in order for them to win a championship, again, yes, they need to be healthy, but you want them to enter the postseason in some sort of a rhythm. And now we see Porzingis obviously left Christmas Day at halftime, didn't come back. Holiday wasn't there that day. Is there any concern from you about the lack of time, despite winning a championship last year, that these guys have had together throughout this season?
Yeah, I think that definitely should be a concern. They've only played 85 minutes together this year, that preferred starting five, which is just
not even
crazy
two
when
full
you think
games.
About it. Not even two full games that just have not been on the court together. And it's a valid point because if you look at it, they've only had their full top eight rotation available for two games, and they've only finished healthy once. So they haven't really had that connectivity. And I think that's a problem, especially because teams are playing them differently this year, where teams are trying different ways. Like they're moving, look at the Grizzlies. They're leaving Drew Holiday open. Now, if they have that full complement of the starting five, I wonder how they kind of maneuver that differently. So I think that is important because rhythm, I think, is also a big part of this. When you're looking at their shooting numbers, you have guys in and out of the lineup every night. Nobody's really finding a rhythm. And then furthermore, they're not finding a rhythm together. So I think that is a problem and one that there's just nothing you can really do about, right? You just need people to be healthy and be on the court. But we've seen what they can do together, and they obviously clicked right away last year. So I think that if you are going to look at it in a positive light, because there's really no way other to do it other than having people on the floor, is look how quickly they clicked last year. And Porzingis actually talked about that when he came back. He just said how it felt natural. So I think that is something that's important, that they've shown that they can just click right away. So that's a positive. But yeah, because teams are playing them differently, I think it is important that these guys get minutes together, and they just haven't been able to.
Celtics WEEI insider Justin Turpin and my former producer when we used to do late night together. All right, look, it's interesting matchup tonight because the Indiana Pacers, I think, were that first team that kind of reminded the Celtics that everybody's going to give you their best shot this season. In that, well, I think it was like in the 130s. I can't remember the score when they were in Indiana. There's a rematch tonight. Do you feel like this team is vulnerable potentially losing 4 out of 5 against this Indiana team? Indiana's just, they just lost their last game, but they've won 5 of their last 6.
Yeah, Indiana's really starting to find themselves. And thinking back to last year, I mean, we've talked about it a ton. It's that nobody played them harder in the playoffs than Indiana. And that's ironic, but it's the only team they swept. Like, they have the best record against Indiana in the playoffs, but nobody played them harder. Like, Indiana made it really difficult, and they do a great job playing fast, and their pace is a little bit difficult. Like, we've seen the Celtics struggle with these teams that like to get out and run and test them in transition. So they definitely can't overlook the Pacers. But one thing that's really become a staple with this team, really under Joe Mazzulla, is they respond really well, is they don't let these things compile. And we saw that last year. They had never had a losing streak more than 2 games. They address what's going on and fix it. And that's what good teams, that's what championship teams do. So I'm not really concerned about it yet, because I really do think they said all the right things after the Sixers loss, where they're all taking accountability. We need to be better defensively. They're playing inconsistent. They said all the right things, but now can they come out and do it? And they've just done it time and time again at such a consistent level that I think they've earned that trust going into this that they're going to turn this around.
Terp, I think the next 3 weeks are going to be the most difficult of the Celtics season opponent-wise, right? You have Indiana back-to-back, then Houston, OKC, Denver early January, Orlando January 17th. Any expectations or thoughts on how they're going to manage that? Are they going to try to go all out and win those games just to try to give themselves a test against other great teams? Or you think they're going to kind of continue to manage minutes the way they've done most of this year?
Yeah, I don't think they're going to really going to deviate from what they're doing now in terms of minutes, because they understand that this is, they're trying to get to the post. And don't get me wrong, they're not overlooking anything, but they understand that they need to have everyone ready to go come the postseason. And there's a whole lot more that goes into that with sports scientists and all the trainers that really get involved in that. But you're right. I mean, looking at this to begin the new year, I mean, at Minnesota, at Houston, and that's a back-to-back, at OKC and at Denver. I mean, that's a daunting path right there. And I think people were looking at that one before the stretch right now, and now they just happen to be hitting a midseason lull, and now they're going on this big, challenging stretch here. So I think it's going to be important. They're going to have to go out, and obviously they're going to go out and try to win every game, but like, this is one I think they're going to really get up for, because they understand that this is a good stretch of teams they're going to be playing, and they can really kind of right the ship here and prove that, you know, this is the same teams last year, and whatever just happened is just a blip on the radar.
All right, Justin, before you go, you remember the creation of NBA Crypto? You remember we're sitting back in the office, and I was like, hey, this is, we're going to do this thing called NBA Crypto. You used to fire off the buttons that Joe is now about to fire off. So are you ready to play NBA Crypto, Justin?
Let's do it.
All right, hit it, Joe.
Bang, Stu, going to be in the moon.
$1.
Thank you, Lewis.
Bang, Stu, going to be in the moon.
$1.
Thank you, Lewis.
$1.
It's going to be in the moon.
You're selling, Mortimer.
Well, that's ridiculous. Turn those machines back on. Turn those machines back on.
Ah, this game is safer than Sam Bankman-Fried in prison with Diddy. It's NBA crypto, where you buy where this team is in their position. You sell that they're not going to be there. Or you hold diamond hand saying, yep, where they are is who they are. Got it, guys? All right, here we go. Starting the Western Conference, we're going to start with the Golden State Warriors. They're 10th in the West. John, are you buying, selling, or holding the Warriors being a 10th place team in the West?
I'm buying. I think they're a little bit better than that, and I wouldn't be surprised if maybe a team like the Clippers or even the Wolves start to fall off a little in the second half of the year. And who knows? Maybe the Warriors will end up with Jimmy Butler as well.
Ah!
Justin, buying, selling, or diamond hands on the Warriors being a 10th place team in the Western Conference?
Yeah, I'm buying it. I think they can move. I'm buying it if they can move up, or am I selling if they can move up?
You're buying. If you buy, that means that they're better than where they are. You're selling, that means that you think they are where they are. They're worse than what they are, and your diamond hands.
I'm going to buy it.
Yeah.
I'm going to buy it. I mean, this team's deep. They're one of the deeper teams in the NBA. They're obviously 3-7 in their last 10, so they haven't been great. But I'm going to buy that. I think the Western Conference is really tough. There's going to be some movement, and that's a veteran team. So I'm going to take them to move up a little bit.
I love that laugh. I'm with you. So I got three buyers here, because you look at some of the teams that we'll mention that are ahead of them. I think, like John is saying, some of them will fall. I think the Warriors are going to make a run that's going to make them even more interesting and get them out of the play-in tournament. So I'm buying the Warriors are better than 10th. A bit of a surprise. The Timberwolves are at 9. I thought they would be a little bit higher. Justin, are you buying, selling, or holding where the Timberwolves are right now?
I'm going to hold it for now. I have not really been impressed with that team. There seems to be a lot of dysfunction, and listening to Anthony Edwards post-game and stuff, there's a lot going on there, so I'm going to hold them for now.
Diamond hands.
I'm going to sell them, because I still think they're a play-in team, but I think they're going to end up being that 10th seed overall. I mentioned before, I think the Warriors are going to jump past them.
Turn those machines back on! Turn those machines back on!
Gosh, when I look at who's ahead of them, I'm going to hold, just like Justin, just because the teams that are ahead of them, some of them belong where they are ahead of them. Others are surprises. And then the Timberwolves are just the negative surprise. So I'm going to hold them right where they are right now at 9. I think their record at being just above 500 is literally just the team that they are. Diamondbacks. The Suns. Haven't we been discussing for the last two or three years, guys, that the Suns should be one of the ultimate teams in the West? They're at 8 right now. Justin, buy, sell, or hold the Suns at 8 in the West.
I'm going to buy the Suns, again, just because you're looking at teams above them, the Clippers and the Lakers. I just can't trust them going down the stretch. So I am going to buy on the Suns. And they're just too talented.
John Lyons, what are we doing here on this exchange?
I'm also going to buy them. And one of the issues they had last year is what we were talking about with Terp earlier with the Celtics, and that their big three barely played together at all last year. I think they're going to get more minutes together later in this year down the stretch, and they're going to jump up a few spots.
Fellows, it looks like it's a buy fest all around because the Suns are just too talented to be this low. You would hate to see a team like this in a playoff situation where they've got to be in the play-in tournament. I think this is a team that's probably destined maybe for 5-6, so I'm buying the Suns to be better than where they are as well. All right, here's a name you guys have been mentioning here on the exchange. The Clippers are at 7. Terp, are you buying, selling, or holding the Clippers as a 7th-place team in the West?
I'm going to sell on the Clippers. This has been an interesting team. Like, Norman Powell has been great for them, but I just don't think there's enough there, so I'm going to sell on them.
Turn those machines back on! Turn those machines back on!
John Lyons?
I'm going to sell for the exact same reasons Terp just said.
Turn those machines back on! Turn those machines back on!
I'm beating my chest like McConaughey. And, sell. Sell them.
Turn those machines back on! Turn those machines back on!
Lakers at 6. Terp, what are you doing? Buying, selling, holding?
I'm going to sell on them, too. That was a hell of a win for them on Christmas, but they're just far too inconsistent. I mean, they're a great talent on that team, but it's a matter of keeping them on the court together. Just been an issue, and just way too inconsistent for me.
Turn those machines back on! Turn those machines back on!
John I'm also going to sell on them. I mean, Anthony Davis just got injured again, so I'm going to sell. Not to drop out of the playoffs, but down a spot or two.
Turn those machines back on! Turn those machines back on!
Yeah, I'm with you guys. Sell the Lakers.
Turn those machines back on! Turn those machines back on!
All right, so now let's look at the top five. We could probably say all these teams we would buy. The Nuggets, the Mavs, the Grizzlies, the Rockets, the Thunder. We could all agree on that, would you say?
I'm going to sell on the Mavericks.
You're selling the Mavericks.
With Luka being down for a month now, I'm gonna sell on the Mavericks.
I'm going to hold on the Mavs. It's kind of like where they should be with that injury, too, but I agree, buy the rest.
Okay, so everybody else is a buy in the West. So let's look at the East, and we've got to start with the 76ers. This team was a disaster at the start. They're at the 12. Are you buy, selling, or holding them to still be just missing out on the play-in tournament?
I'm going to buy on them. Yeah, I'm going to buy on them. They're starting to get a little bit healthy. Their big three starting to play a little bit more together, and I just don't think what we saw from them earlier in the year, that disaster, is indicative of who they are. So I'm going to buy them.
John
I'm
going to
buy them, too. You know how I feel about them. I think fully healthy and rolling, they can be not a team that will beat the Celtics, but a team that will give the Celtics, I think, more trouble than anyone else in the East.
Yeah, I think they're the most dangerous team right now in the East. They've won 7 of their last 10. To put that in perspective, they only have 11 wins. So 7 of their 11 wins have come in their last 10 games. All right, let's move up this chart sheet. Let's go to 8, where the Pacers sit. They play the Celtics tonight. They've won 6 of their last 10. Terp, are you buying the Pacers as an 8 seed team, selling or holding?
I'm going to buy the Pacers. I think we saw what they can do last year in the Eastern Conference Finals. They're starting to find themselves. They're starting to get a little bit more healthy, so I'm going to buy the Pacers.
I'm just going to copy what Terp said because I agree with everything he said about the Pacers. They're finally looking like they're getting in that groove like that team from last year.
Yeah, I think they've been lying in wait just to try and get themselves in a situation where they possibly see the Celtics in the first round. So I could see the Pacers being probably a 7, possibly even a 7-8 seed. So yeah, so I would buy them where they are, possibly just even to move up one slot once the season is over. Let's get into the top five conversation just based on time. The Bucks, the Magic, the Knicks, the Celtics, and the Cavs. Who are you selling? Is there anybody in there you're buying?
I would just flip Milwaukee and Orlando. So I'm going to sell Orlando, buy Milwaukee, just because of the Orlando injuries. And that's a great team. We saw them, obviously, what they did with the Celtics earlier this week. But with both the Wagner brothers down and Paolo still injured, there's just so much going on there that I'm going to sell on them and buy on the Bucks because they're starting to find their identity too. And I know they lost to Brooklyn the other night, but Giannis and Dame didn't play. This Bucks team's really turned it around since they were 2-8. So I'm going to just flip those two. I'll sell on the Magic, buy on the Bucks.
I'll take the Magic and Bucks both over the Knicks. I'll sell on the Knicks to drop down maybe to that 5 or 6 seed. And
wow.
I agree with, like, Terp makes a good point about Orlando's injuries. If they get healthy by the playoffs, though, I'm definitely going to buy them in the playoffs. They're legit when healthy.
I'm going to take a risk, and I'm going to sell the Cavs as the number one seed. I think the Celtics walk them down. You know, look, after 30 games, the Cavs have won 26 of them. Do the next two frames look that way? I don't know, but if you told me that the Celtics could go 22-8 really over the next three frames, I would say that's a real possibility. So I'm going to sell the Cavs as the number one team. And that is NBA Crypto. Justin Turpin, thanks so much for your Celtics insight and expertise. We wish you well and have a great holiday season, my man.
Thank you, guys. Happy holidays.
All right, KJ and Lyons in for Jones and Keefe continues next here on WEEI. KJ and Lyons, WEEI, in for Jones and Keefe. Happy holidays to you. 617-779-7937. That is also the text line. Don't forget, you can tell your Alexa device, hey, Alexa, play WEEI Sports Radio in Boston. It'll bring you right here, get chores done around the house. Or this is one of those lazy weeks, but also, man, just absolute colds galore. I just got a text from my wife saying, try to get a doctor's appointment in for the kid today, and they're full. And see if there's something available tomorrow. I'm thinking, damn, is everybody's kid sick? It's
that time of year, man.
Well, I'm starting to feel it myself. Joe Braverman, you're coming down with something, it sounds like, right?
Oh, I'm sorry. What was that?
Oh, wow.
He's got delayed.
Look, symptoms. I had to help out our buddy Justin Turpin for joining us. We're going to get that up on the Slammed podcast feed.
Okay, there you go. So you're trying to do five things at once. Look, it's part of the holiday schedule, right? Like, you get three guys in who do six jobs for the day and get paid for less than one, right? But it sounds like you're coming down. You're fighting a cold too, Joe?
Not necessarily a cold. I'd say I've just had, you know, a little something in my throat for a couple of days.
It's
but nothing too
cold. It's his flu game.
Yeah, this is your flu game. Did you eat the pizza delivered at the Salt Lake City, Utah hotel? It's just one of those times of the year where it's like you look so forward to the kids having extended time at the house. There's no school. You get to play with the gifts, but like, I kind of feel, well, it hasn't stopped my daughter from playing. She's like a cooking, like obsessed with cooking. And so finally, John, this year, my wife and I got her like a real mixer, like where you could like
ooh,
make real,
all right.
Like a real mixer. Yeah, like
those are legit.
Like get an adult with you to do this. And like, I was so forward to like getting the pancake batter in there with her over these days and stuff like that. But she's down sick and can't even really eat it. So it's like, I bought you this Christmas gift that you would impress Dad with your cooking stuff, and now we can't really get it done. And then once school starts back up, she's going to say, hey, can we make pancakes before we get out of school? And the whole argument is like, get up. We need to get to school. Eat this cereal oatmeal. So I'm kind of missing out on the joy of Christmas a little bit. Does it sound like it in my voice?
No, we're just trying to make up for it here, Braverman and I, so you can have some joy from Christmas.
Two of you both bring me joy.
Yeah, Braverman, we're the kings of joy, right?
There you go. 617-779-7937.
He's still ignoring me. He's like, whatever.
7937. Yeah. You see how you can go ahead and still interrupt the telephone number, but not the sponsorship? See how that worked? That worked out fine. Joe, what do you have on the text line that we've missed over the last hours?
We've actually got some stuff on the Twitch chat. Shout out to everyone watching Twitch. Twitch.tv/BostonWEEI. And talking about the Celtics in the last segment, one Twitcher says that, just got pulled up here, all the other NBA teams are getting a little hyped now, which is perfect timing for the Celtics.
Yeah, this is what I say about, like, I think really just by nature, most the casual NBA fan starts to pay attention at Christmas. I think us, we pay attention to everything that leads up to Christmas, what it looked like before Christmas, what to expect after Christmas, what does it look like in terms of acquisitions, you know, once you get to the first of the year into February and stuff like that. But I think for the casual fan, Now they're starting to pick up on the NBA and where it is. And I think it's really in a good place, better than most perceive it to be. They give you all these numbers, and let's be honest, people don't really know how to read the insights inside of the numbers. They just get a number and say that's the definition. But I do believe that the NBA probably sees that, hey, wait a minute, there is a really good villain in the Celtics that I don't know if they flex in games as you go along in the season, but I think they're going to start flexing in the Celtics more often, because you don't want to sit there and say, let's feature the two best teams in the NBA from the East and the West, Cleveland versus Oklahoma City. Yeah, honey, I'll go shopping with you today.
Well, and I think there's also some teams, like you mentioned Philly earlier, Milwaukee as well,
right,
that started out the season poorly and over the last month or so have bounced back. And so they've earned a little bit more hype because they are talented teams that, again, start out, what was Milwaukee, 2-8 or whatever to start the year.
Yeah.
But they've bounced back. They've played really well. Cleveland has continued to play really well. And the Knicks, who were the biggest story, arguably, the entire offseason, they didn't start out that well either, and they've played a lot better. They're 8-2 in their last 10 games. I think they've won 5 in a row, including Christmas Day. So I think that lays into it as well, where you have teams that maybe started off poorly but have been a lot better over the last month or so.
And some of your name brand cities do have decent teams that at least are in the mix, right? Like
New
despite
York,
what we think
Philly,
of
Yeah,
New York, Philly, Boston. You have Atlanta that's in the mix, whatever you may think of them.
The Lakers are good. Philly's,
right, Golden State, they're in the San Francisco area. So you have large cities that have at least good NBA stories coming out of Christmas. I think really, especially the Golden State Lakers game, it was good to see that's really a game between the 6 and the 8 seed in the West, right? Where with the Philadelphia game, you're like, I thought that was the best game of the day, even though it was a loss. Just to be able to see, okay, you're really going to need Porzingis with this. If you're getting this Embiid, if Embiid is looking like this in these games in a series, I would be concerned if this was an opening round series for the Celtics, knowing that three guys can get you 30. I don't think the Celtics have seen
any team
like that.
Yeah, and the East is showing to be maybe a little bit more deep than we gave it credit for earlier in the year. Like, the West is still the better conference. But remember the first 2 months of the year was like Cleveland, Boston, and everyone else. But Knicks have been better. I think Orlando, if they can just survive without those injuries, they're good. The Bucks have bounced back. The Pacers have bounced back. And, of course, Philly is in the process of bouncing back. So maybe the East has turned into being a little bit deeper of a conference than we might have thought it was at Thanksgiving.
All right, two more texts, and then we'll go to break.
Okay, let's go to let's get back to the Patriots talking about the coaching staff. 617 says, in all caps, we need – the need is in all caps. We need Mike Vrabel and Ben Johnson.
You're not getting both of them. Ben Johnson's going to be a head coach somewhere. Like, yeah, I would take Mike Vrabel over Gerard Mayo. I would take Brian Flores over Gerard Mayo. You're not getting Ben Johnson.
Oh, it's worse when I laugh at the text than when I actually respond to it. So let the laughter show the record what I really thought of what was just written there. Okay, one more text.
978, you were talking about the streaming services during the last hour,
yes.
Super Bowl, all that. If Super Bowl, et cetera, go to streaming services, all sports bars that have big events would need to have smart TVs and subscribe to these services. That's from a 978.
Yeah, well,
or a bunch of Xbox and PlayStations there,
right? Or just a little Fire Stick, TV. I guess we'll come to this. You go to a bar and be like, hey, does your bar have a smart TV and does it have an Ethernet cable to the back of that television? Because I don't want to see a bunch of streaming circles. I guess that's the other part of it is, let's say Netflix, because there's going to be much more than 24 million subscribers watching the Super Bowl. Do we end up getting another situation like with Jake Paul and Mike Tyson, and this is where streaming couldn't handle the load, right? John and I were both saying, I understand where they're trying to go to, but over-the-air broadcast is really the live feed that is sent through the satellite, so that's the direct connection. Everything else you're seeing is being fed to the stream. With the Jake Paul-Mike Tyson fight, they approximated 60 million users tried to access it, and it overwhelmed Netflix. Well, you best believe over 60 million viewers are going to try and access the Super Bowl on Netflix. And if the Super Bowl has streaming issues, that's where you might end up with a class action lawsuit.
Yeah, I am so out on the Super Bowl being on a streaming service.
Yeah.
I agree with you. I think it's coming. I just hate it.
Yeah, I think when it comes, it would be like the death of big time events with streaming. It's like you cannot handle it. they won't know it until they attempt to try and handle it. Right, $24 million, which they got for both of the football games. Yeah, there's probably going to be five times that for the Super Bowl. I don't know if the infrastructure is there to handle it five times that. All right, still to come, we'll get to the Keon White comments regarding his next couple of games here with the Patriots. Plus, we'll talk to Tom Carroll, our Patriots insider here at WEEI. We're in for Jones and Keefe. It's KJ Lyons on WEEI. Good holidays to you.